BZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News, House Speaker Election. I'm Mike Dubusky. Louisiana Republican Mike Johnson just now being sworn in after being elected the new House Speaker. It comes after the first round ballot seemed to end in a loss for Johnson, with three Republicans voting for other candidates. ABC's Jay O'Brien has what happened next.
They emerge from behind those two closed doors, and then Ralph Norman and Keith Self, they walk up to the Speaker's rostrum, and they change their vote just before the vote is gaveled out, which is allowed under the House rules. It puts Johnson over the threshold that he needed. And then, of course, applause breaks out in the House chamber. There's backslapping, there's hugs, there's handshaking. Mike Johnson even shaking the hand of, at least as we saw on the cameras there, Keith Self, after they appeared to talk behind closed doors.
President-elect Donald Trump also spoke on the phone with Norman and Self before they switched their votes. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. Some Northwest Wisconsin projects will receive funding through the Department of Natural Resources Urban Forestry Grant Program this year. The city of Ashland will receive $25,000 to implement a readiness plan for addressing the spread of the invasive emerald ash borer. The city of Menominee will also receive nearly $23,000 for the restoration of its urban tree canopy. Polk County and the city of Spooner received smaller grant awards for a hazard tree removal project and gravel bed starter tree program. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources will hold a virtual public hearing next week regarding a draft rule on deer management unit boundaries. According to a press release, the public hearing will be held on Wednesday at 5 p.m. The potential rule change would reestablish habitat-based deer management units in the Northern Forest Zone and make adjustments to other zone boundaries. The public hearing can be accessed through the DNR website, and the agency will also accept public comments on the draft rule until January 10th. A Gordon man has been charged after allegedly driving under the influence with a child in the vehicle. According to court documents, 43-year-old Randy Goodeal is facing multiple charges, including possession of methamphetamine and operating under the influence with a passenger younger than 16. Goodeal was pulled over by a Rice Lake police officer on Highway 53 after they noticed air fresheners blocking the rearview mirror and tinted taillights. The officer then allegedly found methamphetamines and marijuana during a search. A former Duluth Entertainment Convention Center security guard has been charged for secretly recording a minor and his neighbors. According to court documents, 62-year-old Perry Burke is facing multiple charges, including harassment, interfering with the privacy of a minor, and interfering with privacy at home. According to court documents, Burke had been following a 17-year-old girl around the DECC gym and recording her on two occasions. After obtaining a search warrant for his phone, authorities allegedly found more recordings of his neighbors. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
The Bucks lose to the Nets. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, for the second time in a week, the Bucks lose at home to the Brooklyn Nets. The final 113-110. The Bucks trailed by as much as 24 points. Head coach Doc Rivers.
Yeah, two completely different games to me. I mean, the first game, the other night, Giannis was barely moving, getting back. Tonight, I just thought their defensive intensity, and we literally didn't run much offense tonight, and you saw the difference.
NFL, the Packers getting ready to host the Chicago Bears Sunday. Three Packer players named to the Pro Bowl, defensive players Rashawn Gary and Xavier McKinney. On offense, running back Josh Jacobs, who left the Raiders to come to Green Bay, earning his third career trip to the Pro Bowl.
I feel like if you go about things the right way, you come in every day willing to work, then all the accolades and all the other kind of things, it'll take care of itself in the end. So I just come in and, you know, try to be a better version of me each day, and I guess I'm reaping that right now.
That's the Packers' Josh Jacobs. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Partly cloudy and cold today, with scattered flurries possible and winds whipping out of the northwest, slapping wind chills on top of high temperatures only reaching the mid-teens. This is making it really feel sub-zero. And by tonight, it'll be feeling near 15 below. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
It's 10 degrees at our studios. The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'll talk the Packer-Bear matchup with Civic Media Sports Authority Mike Clements. Then Rob Thomas drops by to talk movies and TV. Now that's a Friday. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I am not Maggie Dawn. Maggie will be back on Monday, but I'm your guest host this afternoon. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am the founder of the Recombobulation Area and the political editor here at Civic Media. If you're unfamiliar with me and my work, you can go check us out at the www.therecombobulationarea.news. We've got a whole lot of stuff that we've been publishing recently from there as well. A lot of guest pieces. We actually have a guest column up today about Medicaid expansion from our friend Sean Fedeplace from the Main Street Alliance. Do check that one out. We had a piece yesterday posted from Angela Lang. Angela was here in studio as my co-host yesterday on the show. You can find that one as a podcast on civicmedia.us or on your favorite podcast app. The piece she wrote is called Where Do We Go From Here? We're headed to an era of a second Trump term. So she's trying to make sense of that. And I think it's a great piece. So do check that one out as well. And we are joined in studio for the rest of the show here for the full 3 o'clock hour by Marquette University professor and award winning Recombobulation Area contributor, Phil Rocco. Phil, thanks so much for being here.
Salut. Good to see you.
Good to see you. And so you are here to discuss a piece that you wrote recently at the Recombobulation Area called Prisoners of the State. So outside of me asking you to write this piece a number of times, so let's take a step back and recombobulate here. What is the story that you took a look at more closely here in this deep dive essay at the Recombobulation Area called Prisoners of the State?
So I was really into something happened in August, I guess it started, that really puzzled me. And it was interesting because nothing quite made sense. It was in the neighboring county, which is, of course, why it didn't make sense to me initially. I live in Milwaukee County. Story takes place in Waukesha County. And I wanted to understand what was going on. And what had happened was the county, which is sort of known for being and sort of advertises itself as being the almost like the antithesis of the way the Republicans portray Milwaukee in the news, Waukesha County is like low tax, efficient spending, you know, is able to sort of manage its own
just this conservative fiscal, bastion
right,
of
right.
Yeah.
And what had happened was there was a proposal very similar to a Milwaukee county proposal to, you know, very small increase in the sales tax.
Mm-hmm. So not dissimilar to what Chris Abele had been pushing for a decade.
Exactly.
For what David Crowley has been working for at the county for a long time to have a very small increase in the sales tax to fund a number of services that were going to be cut otherwise.
Right. And part of the point was this historic, quote unquote, historic infusion of shared revenue from the state which was $274 million in total on an annualized basis, had really short shrifted counties. That counties in Wisconsin, hugely important units of government, 72 of them, got about $50 million out of this $274 million deal. Mm. Not that much money. And
not that much,
especially out of the chunk piece of the pie. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that really matters for counties because, you know, counties are, in addition to being units of local government that do things like provide services that people in the county want, like parks, transit, things of this nature, they're also on the hook for providing all of these mandatory services that the state forces them to provide because they're just an agent of the state government, right? So all of the court services, health and human, a lot of mandatory health and human services, county sheriff's departments, these sorts of things. So counties are kind of on the hook for a lot. And so it's not surprising that in the absence of a lot of additional revenue, counties with growing populations like Waukesha County are going to have service needs that their current revenue levels, even with a, you know, property tax increase and so on, are going to exceed. And so there was this push for a very modest increase in the sales tax. Now, and the thing that was fascinating. Yeah, go ahead.
And it was like 0.5%.
0.5%.
And I think you said it in the piece too, but most counties in Wisconsin have already
done this, right? But I think three.
Yeah.
I think Manitowoc County is going to put one into place
in 2025,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought this was really interesting. And what was more, so I was like, okay, one, here's, you know, something that you don't tend to see in a kind of Republican stronghold, a tax increase proposal being pushed by the county executive. But then the more interesting thing was the reaction to it among the business community in Waukesha County was like the polar opposite of the reaction to the proposal in Milwaukee County. Milwaukee County, you had the Chamber of Commerce, MMAC, supported the sales tax increases. It was basically
in many ways we're driving the conversation for a long time.
Absolutely.
Like the MMAC, there's plenty that I disagree with about the MMAC, but they have for a really long time been pushing for this independent revenue stream for Milwaukee County that not only to address like some of these crushing budgetary needs, but also to have something that is independent from the whims of Madison too.
Yeah. And to put this in context, right. In the context of local governments nationwide, local governments in Wisconsin are heavily dependent on property tax revenue. They have very little diversity in terms of the revenue sources that are available to them. And that's different in a way than a lot of other places around the country. And so in Waukesha County, very differently, the business community went four square against this property tax increase. And I think our former governor, Scott Walker, now a resident of Waukesha County, also got involved kind of tweeting out some links to information from this kind of business coalition against the sales tax.
The Waukesha County increase. Business Alliance
was urging
elected officials to, I think you put it in the piece, quote, slow down and reevaluate.
Right. Which is, of course, code for in politics. Slow down and reevaluate means no.
Yeah.
And ultimately that was successful in killing the proposal.
Right.
And so what.
That tweet went out in mid-October, October 16th. And then on October 22nd, Waukesha County Executive Paul Farrow tweeted that he was withdrawing the sales tax.
Yeah, this
ordinance.
Was like an hour before the meeting where they were going to vote on it. So it was a very like last minute pull the proposal.
Right.
And so, you know, the next thing that happened, and I think this is a pretty standard thing in local governments because they are, in fact, prisoners of the state. The state determines a lot of the revenue sources that they have, what they have to do. The next move that the county made was to pass a resolution kind of demanding a fair share, whatever that means, of state shared revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So it again, a huge surplus at the state, lots of unspent money, lots of money that could have been put into shared revenue last time. Again, Tony Evers proposal was like twice the size of Republicans' proposal for shared revenue.
Right. And you documented that at length in your shared revenue series 2 years ago about how much more funding the Tony Evers proposal would have brought to counties and municipalities across the state. So I think the GOP, this was a GOP passed bill. They were negotiating with Milwaukee County. They were negotiating with a number of other stakeholders in this, Wisconsin Counties Association, whatever it might be. But the initial proposal from the governor would have gone far, far, far farther to fund local government than even that Republicans were even considering.
Yeah, it was, Republicans would say, I think, compared to what their initial proposal was, the final bill that was passed and signed into law, you know, it moved a little bit. I mean, there were small increases, but they were really still, it was still like half of what Evers proposed.
Right.
And the other thing to consider, right, is Evers' bill kept the vast majority of the money for county and municipal aid is basically flexible. They could use most of the money, not all of it. Some of it had to be used for police, fire, mm-hmm. EMS, but a lot of it is still sort of flexible aid. With the additional money that came in Act 12, none of his additional flexible aid. It has to be used for a very narrow series of purposes. So, again, these are things that sort of put fetters on counties, on municipalities. And so naturally, after this sales tax thing failed, the county board in Waukesha passed a resolution to kind of make a demand, which is, you know, really just a sort of lobbying.
It's kind of just like the pretty strongly please. Worded letter.
Yeah, it's the strongly worded letter.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that it doesn't matter, but it sort of immediately was met with a rebuke from one of Waukesha County senators in Madison. Also a Republican, same party as the county executive, but basically said, look, you guys need to get your act together and, clean house fiscally and, tough luck. You should not expect anything else to come out of Madison, despite the fact that we have this big surplus. And I thought that was really kind of interesting. And it made me, I want to look a little bit deeper about sort of like, why have counties gotten this kind of short shrift? Why in particular, I think one of the big claims that Waukesha County executives and others made was that the county performed worst in terms of the amount of money it got back from the state. And I was kind of curious about why that was, and also why the amount of money that that Waukesha County got was so limited.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in and actually sort of did a deeper dive, even than I did when I did that initial series for you, on what the formula was that gave money to counties and municipalities. And the municipal one is somewhat easier, but the county one defies description. We'll get into it, I guess, after the break. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing the music come mm-hmm. up.
Cardi's on it back there. Yeah, we'll get into more after the break. But I think your research showed that, you know, Waukesha was among the counties that were getting the lowest per capita level of aid as well.
And so we're right there with him in Milwaukee. So
and right next to Milwaukee. So you know, it's so interesting to see the difference in perception about how we're talking about these things when it comes to if it's happening in Milwaukee versus when it's happening in Waukesha County. If you'd like to join the conversation, Phil is going to be sticking with us for the rest of the hour here on the Maggie Dawn Show. So shoot us a text, give us a call, 855-752-4842. We'd love to hear from you. Again, I'm your guest host this afternoon. My name is Dan Schaefer, joined here for the rest of the 3 o'clock hour by Marquette University professor Phil Rocco, and we will be right back.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In November 2022, Michigan voters passed a constitutional amendment enshrining voting protections and expanding ballot access. After the legislature implemented the voters' directive, GOP legislators sued, claiming that only the legislature could make such changes. Proposition 2 mandated 9 days of early voting, protections for voters and election workers from harassment, and a tracking system for absentee ballots. It allowed for the funding of secure drop boxes and the counting of military and overseas ballots if postmarked by Election Day, and several other reforms. Conjuring the independent state legislature theory, which argues that the U.S. Constitution allows only legislatures to control election law, 11 Michigan GOP legislators sued. On December 20th, the Federal Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the lower court's denial of the Michigan legislators' claim. But importantly, it did so, saying that while the individual legislators had no standing to bring the case, a full legislature could, leaving the door open a crack. The U.S. Supreme Court mostly dismissed the theory in 2023's Moore v. Harper case, but Justices Thomas, Gorsuch, and Alito appear to be all in on the theory. For the moment, the pro-voter reforms in Michigan are safe, but be watching for the independent state legislature theory to pop up again soon. We have the decision at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You want to feel important. You want to be a part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers. We are normal people just like you. And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your guest host this afternoon. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm the founder of the Recombobulation Area and the political editor here at Civic Media. Maggie will be back as far as our regularly scheduled programming next week, but you're stuck with me for another 40 minutes or so. And I'm lucky to be joined in studio today, live from our studio in Racine, Wisconsin, with Marquette University Professor Phil Rocco. And we've been talking a little bit about his piece at the Recombobulation Area. At the Recombobulation Area, called "Prisoners of the State," and really breaking down a number of issues that are happening, kind of in the fallout of the 2023 shared revenue bill, and how that is, you know, the counties and municipalities of the state exist downstream from state government, and how that, you know, it's like the domino falling, right? The domino of the state shared revenue bill being passed in 2023. After 2024, we'll realize kind of like what exactly the on the ground impact of this law is going to mean. And then from there, you know, we're seeing some continued challenges on the local level as well. And so we're getting into that a little bit before the break, Phil.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I can't hear myself. There we go. There I am. Oh, very good. So, yeah, this is the thing that happens when big pieces of legislation pass. There's a signing ceremony and they're like, look at all this money. They just like cite a very large figure. And it's just a thing that the human brain does is you see the large figure and it just sort of, you stop thinking about like the scale and like the context and like how much, like what does that actually look like when you start to the process of like cutting checks and thinking about full-time equivalent employees and all of the things the government needs to work. And I think what we're seeing now around the state is actually that $274 million, although a huge improvement, was still not the kind of aid that counties and municipalities needed. And to put this in greater context, this idea of like states sharing money with local governments, it's not, as I think it's sometimes portrayed, like a gift or like the state being nice. It goes back.
That is certainly kind of the way that Robin Voss has framed it.
It's not. If you go back to why the state started doing this, it was back in 1911. And back in 1911, Wisconsin was the first state to create a progressive modern income tax and kind of update its ancient kind of creaking fiscal machinery. And in exchange for the state saying, look, no local governments can tax income. We get to be the exclusive government that taxes income. They said, we're going to give local governments a cut of money that they would have received, were they able to tax income? And then when the state started taxing sales, that principle kind of got rolled in as well. So it, you can think of it as like, it's like a big trade-off. In exchange for not allowing local governments to be masters of their own fiscal destiny, the state is giving them back a share of what they, in a way, would have received, or some distribution of what local governments in general would have received had they been able to do that kind of taxation. And so, you know, when local governments, I think around budget season, people are thinking like, you know, does my street need to be repaved? Are the lights on my, you know, street reliable? Is
my garbage getting picked up? Is the snow getting removed outside of our?
Or do my property taxes go up on the other side of things?
Sure.
Right. The people that you tend to look to blame or to give credit to are your local officials, your county board, your common council, your alders, your mayor. But in reality, that's a little bit of an illusion that when local governments are making those decisions, they're always making them in the shadow of a bigger set of decisions the state makes when it does its biennial budget. We're coming up on another biennial budget process. And one of the things that you might expect to see, but I think we see less of than we probably should, is local communities going around from the state and saying, look, hey, you know, it was very nice that we did Act 12, then we got, you know, $274 million.
For keeping us from falling off
the
cliff.
Thank you for keeping us falling off the cliff. But here are all the services we provide that if we didn't provide them, voters would be coming to you and asking you to provide them.
Right.
And so we're essentially taking the heat off of you. And if you shortchange us, you're forcing us to raise taxes and us to take the political blame for something that actually it's you who have handcuffed us, right? The state is the one that sets the tax policy and what local governments can tax. The state is the one that creates unfunded mandates for local government. So it's like, really, it's not just about like the distribution of money in the state. It's the distribution of like political credit and blame. That's really what we're talking about.
Well, and I wrote something about this a number of years ago, too. And when the Republicans in the state were furious about the, you know, defund the police rhetoric that was coming out of the protests in 2020. And so, but if you really look at what was happening at the time with the fact that the Republican controlled state legislature was cutting shared revenue, the people who were actually defunding the police at the time was state government.
Absolutely.
And so when Milwaukee was forced to, I think Mayor Barrett at the time or whoever it might be, they were saying, yeah, let's raise the sales tax to pay for police and pay for these different things. Robin Voss over and over again was saying, nope, never going to happen. We're not going to raise the sales tax. And so if you are actually looking at who should have been considered responsible for the decline in number of, you know, sworn officers, the decline in number of police funding, decline in school funding, fire department, public works, whatever it might be that you care about that matters to your life, it is, you know, you could blame the city and the county. And, you know, of course, you want to keep these places accountable, but you also need to go to the source. And the source for so much of this and the source of so many of the issues that Wisconsin faces goes back to the Republican controlled Wisconsin state legislature.
Yeah. Go to Madison. Look to Madison.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. You're assigning blame to Milwaukee that should be assigned to the state capitol in Madison. We're going to be continuing to talk a little further about this issue after the break here on the Maggie Dawn Show. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call. Shoot us a text, 855-752-4842. We've got some listeners commenting in that they like Cardi's music selections today. I agree. Solid work back
well
on the
done,
board there,
man.
Cardi, taking us into a Friday afternoon. And once again, I'm your guest host today. My name is Dan Schaefer on the Civic Media Network, and we will be right back.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Stephanie Hoff for the Midwest Farm Report, along with you on a Thursday. Happy New Year as we make it through the second day of 2025. If your holiday dishes called for lots of butter, or if you slabbed on an extra pat on your toast this morning, you're not alone. Mike North, Principal of Risk Management with EverEgg, says butter is popular, and that will keep the market strong for dairy producers and processors.
The butter market will remain strong. We've seen this, you know, resurgence around butter over the course of the last 6-7 years as we've rediscovered the value of butterfat and not, you know, saw the pressures from a health perspective around the use of it. You know, butter has, you know, become a choice fat in our diet and a healthy one at that. So it appears that butter is going to remain strong, and some of these shortened supply stories will certainly go a long ways to help the price side of that discussion.
I think that also means that if you decided to eat healthier in the new year, butter can still be a part of your meals. Mike North is the Principal of Risk Management with EverEgg. Stick around. We'll take a look at butter prices and our closing markets next.
There goes Pam Yonke across Wisconsin in her suburban truck. Thanks to Equity Livestock Cooperative, marketing your livestock, financing your operation, and supporting the livestock community since 1922. And to Cleary Building Corp. Cleary Building Corp. Built with pride before the shamrock is applied. Explore clearybuilding.com today. Keep up with Pam at MidwestFarmReport.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
Not much movement in the grain trade today on the close from Chicago. New crop corn was up 2¾ cents at 446.5. New crop soybeans also closed up 2¾ cents at 1028 a bushel. And July new crop wheat is down a nickel at 564.5. Currently, the January Class 3 milk contract is trading up 6 cents at $20.37 a hundredweight, and the February contract is up 10 cents at $20.48 a hundredweight. Barrel cheese was unchanged from Tuesday at $1.82.5, and the 40-pound block cheese up a quarter of a cent, closing at $1.91.25. Double A butter closed down a half a penny at $2.54.5 per pound. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Partly cloudy and cold today, with scattered flurries possible and winds whipping out of the northwest, slapping wind chills on top of high temperatures only reaching the mid-teens. This is making it really feel sub-zero. And by tonight, it'll be feeling near 15 below. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
It's 10 degrees at our studios.
The Todd Alba Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots.
Woot, woot.
And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we will preview the inauguration of the Wisconsin State Senate and Wisconsin State Assembly and look forward to what's ahead in 2025. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your guest host this afternoon. My name is Dan Schaefer. We've got Cardi on the board bringing us the tunes, coming in and out of these breaks today. Good stuff all around. And we're joined in studio by our guest for the full 3 o'clock hour of the show, Phil Rocco of Marquette University. And we have been taking a deep dive on the piece that he wrote right before the holiday break there called Prisoners of the State, talking about some of the effects of the 2023 shared revenue law and how that's impacting some local communities. This one focused a little bit more closely on Waukesha County, my home county, where I was raised in the churches
cradle of eminence.
That's right. The Brookfield churches and baseball fields all over Waukesha County. That's where I was raised. But we have a caller ready to join us. Cardi, is Tom from LA joining us on the show here?
Tom, you're on the air.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Dan. First, you know, thanks for what you do with the Recombobulation Area. And I just wanted to give an idea that I think would be a great story for you guys to write, either on the Recombobulation Area or one of your writers, because you've had a couple, you know, Lang yesterday, and you have the gentleman today. But an article called Legacy of Teachers, and actually do a deep dive into the number of people whose parents were in teaching, but now their kids are not going in teaching in the state of Wisconsin. I have eight brothers and sisters, including in-laws, that were all teachers. And when Act 10 happened and when all of that went down with Scott Walker, and I have a sister as a cop in Madison. And when all that went down, basically, you know, even if the kids wanted to go into teaching, they chose not to. And they went into the private sector. And I think there's a really interesting article that could be written there about that. And, you know, it also goes along, of course, with the financing that you guys are talking about versus the state versus the local and all that stuff. But I think it'd be a really good article. You could call it Legacy of Teachers, or a book even. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah. And, you know, in the journalism world where I come from, if you come up with the idea, you're the one writing it.
Yeah, you have
so
to.
You got,
it now.
So, Tom, Tom, you gave yourself an assignment there.
No,
a good pitch for the Recombobulation Area. Maybe you could write it. You know, but I think that's a good point.
Well, no. There is also like a huge amount of social science evidence on the, you know, decline in the sort of attractiveness of teaching in states that, you know,
are hostile to teachers.
Essentially hostile to teachers in the teaching profession. And that supports exactly what Tom is saying. But I like that, because that is sort of the human side that we should probably be leading with when we talk about budgets, right? I think that budgetary politics is super interesting. Every time I try to convince my students of this, their eyes glaze over. And I think the problem is, I call it budgetary politics, right?
Yeah.
It's just like the politics of stuff that you need and take for granted, right? It's like, ultimately, at the end of the day, any sort of public service that is provided, somebody has to come up with the budget for that. Somebody has to pay for it. And somebody has to decide how much of a good thing is enough. And I think that we don't tend to talk. I think particularly in Wisconsin, like moving here, I moved here like 8 years ago, and I found our budget process to be a bit cryptic. And, you know, I would have to like listen to the old Wisconsin Politics podcast that used to be on WPR, RIP.
Or spend a lot of time on Wisconsin or whatever
just,
it might be.
Yeah, you just have to like, and the thing is, you shouldn't have to become a nerd to get into this, because this is actually, this affects everybody.
Right.
Like, we should not be delegating these responsibilities to the nerds. But it is. And I think that that's such a good way of evoking it, is like, does somebody actually go into public service, occupation, teaching? Is it providing this essential thing that we need to make society work? That is back of a budgetary decision government makes.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes in Wisconsin, it's intentional to make this budget process obscure, or, you know, The one I'm thinking of right now is like in the last round of the budget, the Joint Finance Committee, which essentially writes the budget, right?
The legislature within the legislature.
The legislature within the legislature. That's another Phil Rocco piece that could happen too. Yes. But they had a vote on a number of key issues for the state budget this past year that was held in the middle of the night. And yep. So like the, you know, I was covering a lot of things about childcare at the time. There was a real need for additional childcare funding in the state budget. And not only did they not put any money for it into the state budget, any additional funds for childcare in the state budget, they had that vote on it at 2:30 in the morning.
And if you watch the way that JFC strips provisions from the budget, there's not a lot of ceremony or debate or deliberation. They're like, yep, we're moving on. We're just stripping that one out. It's like, and so it's, you know, for the person who believes that there's actually like reasoned deliberation going on in these things, there really often is not. But I think that comes back to the way that these sort of decisions about shared revenue. It's not as if the Waukesha County executive and others from around the state weren't there in Madison in 2023 saying that this money wasn't enough. They were. Paul Farrow was at the hearings that they actually did have on Act 12.
He provided testimony, and he said,
he essentially called them out. He said, so I'll paraphrase, but he said, you know, this is not, you're calling this historic, but are we giving counties and municipalities what they needed? And is the approach to this a fair one? And I think the conflict, and I think one of the most interesting features of like why Waukesha County got so little funding and why many counties got less than perhaps they needed was, you know, there's this very convoluted formula. And one of the parts of the formula, it basically is, you know, calculates, you know, based on aidable revenues and all these things that counties might need aid on. And so like under that part of the formula, I think Waukesha County would have gotten something like $4 million a year. And then there's another part of the formula that says counties under this part can't get more than $50 million total, all counties.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the next part of the formula is you have to prorate all of the sums that counties would have gotten. So that shaves off, you know, at least $500,000, maybe more to Waukesha County. So it's not a question of like, oh, we couldn't figure out the math. It's a question of like, the state legislature did not want to spend this money. Why did they not want to spend it? Probably because, I mean, my guess is that they were saving that surplus because they wanted to do a tax cut and mm-hmm. probably a tax cut that had upwardly redistributive effects.
Well, their one economic policy that the Republicans have in Wisconsin is just they over and over again, they just wanted to stop everything else and just hit that one economic policy button of tax cuts that overwhelmingly benefit the wealthiest Wisconsinites.
And I think that's the thing is that like tax policy to some extent is discussed completely apart from all of the other social policy that the state does. And, you know, are there places where a tax credit, tax rebate, tax cut might be a useful policy tool to do the thing that we want to do collectively as citizens of this state? Maybe. But it's never put into conversation with all of the other things that actually we need to do. And I think that often it is assumed that government could just continue to do more, continue to produce the services people want them to provide with less. That we could, we could have buses that take people to jobs that they need to get to, where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
Something
mm-hmm.
like last mile kind of connection. Well, sure, but not without, a prodigious amount of money to fund public transportation.
Right. You don't do more with less. You do less with less.
You do.
That's how it works.
I don't know of a single place in which the do more with less principle actually works. It's always just a little bit of a sleight of hand.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, Phil Rocco is our guest for the hour here on the Maggie Don Show. I'm your guest host. My name is Dan Schaefer. We've been talking about shared revenue and how that 2023 law is impacting communities across the state, in particular Waukesha County. And now, Cardi, do we have a caller ready to join us next here?
Yes, we do. Second, let's bring him on the line. Second caller. Richard Marks.
All right, cool. Richard, welcome to the Maggie Don Show.
Phil, I'm wondering if you realize that a lot of the Waukesha County local small municipalities, you know, they raised the footage size of the buildings of homes, which in a sense raised the taxes.
I had not heard of
real
this.
Estate. Yeah, I talked to numerous people in small communities, and they didn't realize that, you know, like a lot of the cities and small areas, through the years, they raised square footage size, which raises the value of the home.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the interesting things about Waukesha County, just in general, is it's, I think, in terms of property value, is among, if not the, like, highest per capita property value in the state.
Yeah, yeah. And when people make those additions to their homes, they get those assessments
right.
from their local municipality. And like you were mentioning earlier in the show, Wisconsin municipalities, more than just about any other state in the country, are really reliant on those property taxes. So this stuff is all connected, right?
Absolutely.
So, Richard, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. And so I think these things are all connected. So when you're upset about, you know, maybe an increase in your property tax bill, whatever it might be, just remember that it's not the city that you live in are not making those decisions in a vacuum. There are some complexity to this. And I'm not, and that's not to say that you shouldn't, you know, hold your local government accountable efficiently spending the money that they do receive through property taxes. What I'm saying is that you need to look at the bigger picture. And the bigger picture here is that the state of Wisconsin, under Republican control, is sitting on a $4.6 billion surplus as your property taxes are going up, as county and municipal services are being cut. And, you know, for pretty much all of 2024, the Republican-controlled Wisconsin state legislature was doing nothing about it. And they basically are a part-time legislature, even though they draw a full-time salary, and they work, they have a campaign year, and then they have a budget year. Well, they just finished their campaign year, and now we're headed towards a budget year. So I think it is very important to take a look at what they are going to do with that $4.6 billion. Are they going to, you know, help out the counties and municipalities that need it, that clearly needed more than what they gave them in the shared revenue law? Or are they going to do like what we were talking about, hit the one economic policy button and give a big tax cut away to the wealthiest Wisconsinites?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big ways into this conversation is asking the question, which I think at some point after you continue to be told no, you stop asking for the things that you need. And in a way, you can habituate yourself to not doing with those services. But there are all kinds of things that we can do to make the communities that we live in better. And, you know, is it programming at libraries? Is it ensuring that, you know, the transit lines get people to where they need to be? Is it taking care of our public parks? You know, all kinds of things. Is it expanding Badger Care and to become one of the states, like a majority of states that have, you know, taken Medicaid expansion? Those are all like very real needs, and they get put off the table when we just sort of treat this as like this is just a game of dividing the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of making quote unquote budget policy. This is policy that affects every kind of service that government might provide and that we actually are owed.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I always say is that democracy does not happen from the top down. It happens from the bottom up. And so you can get involved in what's happening in your local government. You can get involved in what's happening in the state government. And those decisions really have a profound impact on your day-to-day life. Phil's going to stick with us for one more segment here as we finish up the show this afternoon on the Maggie Don Show. Lots to discuss, lots going on. If you want to join the conversation, we are at 855-752-4842, and we'll be right back.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Eyezervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Eyezervay. Eyezervay
or avacincaptad pegol is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Eyezervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Eyezervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Eyezervay today.
Eyezervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Eyezervay.com. That's Eyezervay.com.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Earl Ingram.
The Republicans and Donald Trump want to impose tariffs. They say it's going to bring in $2.7 trillion.
That's what they say when they're trying to justify a tax reduction. Those broad tariffs are not good for the average American.
You know, Sandy, I'm not a guy that knows anything about calculus and any of those things, but I do know how to add and subtract. They're adding to the national debt.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt and Air on Air.
To the Maggie Dawn Show, our final segment of the show of the week here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie will be back with you for our regularly scheduled programming on Monday, but I am here just for a few more minutes with you. I'm your guest host today and yesterday. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm the founder of the Recombobulation Area and a political editor here at Civic Media. One of the pieces that you can find at the Recombobulation Area, something we published today, is titled Why Badger Care Expansion Would Be Good for Wisconsin Small Businesses. This is a guest column by a friend of the show, Sean Fetteplace of the Main Street Alliance. Sean wrote a terrific piece. I encourage you to go check it out. Wisconsin is one of only 10 states that has not fully expanded Medicaid. Really the only state in the Midwest, you know, those liberals in Iowa and Missouri,
Nebraska
and Indiana have expanded Medicaid, but right. Wisconsin has not. And Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has been extraordinarily stubborn on this point. So I do wonder as we, you know, the Congress is beginning its session today, the state legislature will begin its session in short order, is it next week? I believe. Yeah. And so we'll be starting to take a look at what exactly are those the points that we're going to be debating. I think this should be a big one. I think it's just seems so long overdue for Wisconsin to take the Medicaid expansion. And we're getting worse care for higher costs, because of it. And it's just baffling that it has been all this time and we're still here not expanding Medicaid.
Yeah, I mean, I think Wisconsin is now among a really not especially auspicious group of states that have, you know, populations that would benefit immensely from having access to Medicaid that would be healthier, right? Where there are all kinds of positive health outcomes that are associated with Medicaid, people getting screened for chronic diseases earlier, being able to take care of those things before it becomes a problem. This is ultimately
it's a huge mental health
care improvements as a result. I mean, take your pick of good health outcome. And to say nothing of health being an important piece of this, not taking Medicaid expansion is essentially leaving over $1.4 billion of federal money on the table. In fact,
and it's taxes we're it's already taxes paying.
We're paying, yeah. And essentially, people in other states are being able to reap the benefits of. So you know, what healthcare reform idea can you think of that would increase the number of people with coverage by something like 90,000 people in the state of Wisconsin, and would also save the state taxpayer something like $1.4 billion. It's hard to find.
And as we've discussed throughout the show, I think there are a lot of counties and municipalities that could use a chunk of like a $1.4 billion influx
exactly.
to our budget.
Yeah. Right. There are other things that you could use that money for. And I think one of the interesting things here, if you look at states, you know, initially when the ACA passed, there was a really clear red and blue pattern. You know, Republican states not taking the expansion, not wanting to lift a finger to help with the implementation of the law. But that really started to bleed off, you know, after about the first 3 or 4 years, especially where Medicaid was concerned. You saw Republican states taking the expansion, some because governors took a political leadership role. Chris Christie, John Kasich, and even Jan Brewer from Arizona took a leadership role. In other states where governors weren't going to lead on it, you had citizen-based movements and you had the issue getting on the ballot. We don't have the ability to do that in Wisconsin. We don't have an initiative process.
Right. So that's where it passed in think Nebraska, states like Nebraska, Missouri.
Idaho, right. And yeah. It passed overwhelmingly, by the way. It's right. very popular, right. as it is here in Wisconsin. The state that Wisconsin, I think, most resembles on the non-expansion side didn't go through an initiative is North Carolina. North Carolina was a late adopter, mm-hmm. And you had essentially
a very Republican legislature,
very Republican
and a Democratic
legislature,
governor. Yeah,
and you had Republicans flipping on Medicaid expansion, and one of the reasons why was you had small businesses stepping up and saying, "Look, this is hurting us. Not having Medicaid expansion is a problem." For us. And I think that's the point that Sean is making here. It's like, if we want to celebrate the virtues of small business and being small business being a core of many local economies in Wisconsin, then we should, you know, essentially make decisions that are going to help small businesses. And this is one of them.
Yeah. And I attended a campaign event that Sean and the Main Street Alliance held in Wauwatosa. There was two assembly candidates running. It was Robin Vining, Democrat, Tom Mikulski, the Republican. And one of the questions from one of the small business owners, because that was the topic of the forum, was about healthcare and about Badger Care expansion, about a public option for Badger Care. And Robin, Representative Vining, was talking about how she had introduced legislation offering a public option for Badger Care, had been the lead author on Medicaid expansion as, you know, I think the ranking Democrat in the Health Committee. And then she talked about all of these different things and then went over to the Republican representative. She was just like, "Yeah, I don't really know."
Right.
He just had no plans, you know, and we heard it from Donald Trump on the debate stage last year, which is we have concepts of a plan for healthcare and we're just really spinning our wheels and not getting anywhere. So do check out the piece today at the Recombobulation Area. Again, the headline for that one is "Why Badger Care Expansion Would Be Good for Small Businesses." I do hope that one is part of the state budget when we get back to it. But we are getting to the end of our show today. So thank you to our guest for the last hour, Phil Rocco. Do check out his work at the Recombobulation Area, his gold Milwaukee Press Club Gold Award-winning work at the Recombobulation Area. And thanks to all of you for joining us on the Maggie Dawn Show today and yesterday. While I've been guest hosting, it's been a real treat to be with you. And thank you so much. And now go enjoy your Friday. Enjoy your weekend. Cardi on the board here. Go enjoy your weekend Indeed. As well. And thank you so much for joining us. Be well.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Dom Selvia.
Next time, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, a law review, James Santel joins me. Was Merrick Garland the worst AG ever? Plus, updates on the speaker's race and the Wisconsin Election Commission investigation. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when.
don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is the Buzz of the North.
WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, has secured the House speakership. On the House floor, he outlined his plans for the 119th Congress.
We have a big agenda. We have a lot to do, and we can do it in a bipartisan fashion. We can fight high inflation, and we must. We'll give relief to Americans, and we'll extend the Trump tax cuts.
A Manhattan judge has set next Friday as the sentencing date for President-elect Donald Trump in his criminal hush money case. The judge signals that he plans to sentence the president-elect to an unconditional discharge, which means Trump avoids serious punishment, but the record of his conviction remains.
The judge is going to make clear now he's going to get an unconditional discharge. We know what the sentence is going to be, but he is going to insist that Trump appear for it to uphold the integrity of the jury verdict.
ABC's Aaron Katursky. The president-elect can appear in person or virtually. He had, in theory, faced 4 years in prison. This is ABC News.
I'm